I used iPod because I broke my first one for $50. So.
Thank you. I think we'll call the meeting to order. Good afternoon, everyone. Madam Secretary, could we have the roll call?
Mr. Dano?
Present.
Mr. Dively?
Here.
Mr. Getz?
Here.
Mr. Hutchinson?
Here.
Mr. Cradaville?
Here.
Mr. Shirley?
Here.
Dr. Webb?
Here.
Mr. Welsh?
Here.
Our historian has told us that this is the first time we've had a full contingent of board members here, 8 members, since June of 2005. So congratulations, everybody, for attending today, and it's great to have a full board. We look forward to the discussion. First item of business would be approval of minutes. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any discussion? Roll call, please.
Mr. Dano?
Yes.
Mr. Dively?
Yes.
Mr. Getz?
Yes.
Mr. Hutchinson?
Yes.
Mr. Cradaville?
Yes.
Mr. Shirley?
Yes.
Mr. Welsh?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes. As we all know, the university here has been working on the development of a new strategic plan for several months. The board has appreciated the opportunity that we've had to take part in that discussion. We had two board members who were on the committee, Mr. Welch being one of them, and I was the other. And we've had various communications regarding progress and an opportunity to provide input. So now we're ready for a presentation on the finalized plan, and I believe the proposition is before the board for our approval. Dr. Weber.
Thank you very much, and it's really a great pleasure to be here today to present you with this overview of our strategic plan. Again, this is a 5-year plan, and so with the board's endorsement today, we'll be beginning implementation this year through the year 2016. Just a little bit about the planning process. There are really many reasons to do a planning process, and this one, this collaborative process we used, served many purposes. It was a rededication to our mission and a reaffirmation of who we are. We spent time reflecting on our accomplishments, but overall, we had the recognition that the university's future is our collective responsibility. On the right, you can see some of the photos that were taken during various stages of the planning process. And this planning process depended on the participation of many, many people. And I'd like to recognize some of those people at this point. First of all, way back, it seems like forever, back in October of 2010, I approached, after discussions with President's Council, I approached a couple of colleagues to see if they would be willing to serve as co-chairs with me in leading this strategic planning process. Those co-chairs were Ken Baker, our Director of Campus Recreation. And Ken, if you'd either stand or identify yourself. And then, secondly, Asege Hailemariam, professor of psychology, who I don't believe is here. She's accompanying a job candidate through the visitation on campus. So if she pops in, we will identify her as well. Ken and Asege both quickly agreed to join me in chairing this process, and absolutely fabulous people to work with, and brought energy and considered thought to the process. After putting out a call to the campus for volunteers, Ken and Asege and I assembled a steering committee of 28 faculty, staff, and students to guide the process through the year. And this steering committee came together very quickly. They learned about the process we were using and were dedicated throughout the year. And no matter what the task was or however Herculean it may have seemed to them, they plunged into it with tons of vigor and dedication. And so if we have several of the steering committee members in attendance today, if you who are in attendance could either stand or otherwise identify yourselves so we can recognize your accomplishments. Thank you all. Then we had fabulous support staff that were helping us throughout. Mike Maurer, our Director of Planning, Budget, and Institutional Research. Mike. Amy Edwards, our Assistant Director of Planning and Institutional Research. Amy was fabulous in facilitating many, many sessions. And then from my office, Ellen Coltis provided tons of support. None of this process could have happened without any of those people, along with all the rest of you who throughout calendar year 2011 participated in one way, shape, or form. We really had many excellent discussions on campus. What emerged from our discussions were six key strategic themes that we want to focus on as we move forward in the next 5 years. And I'll just quickly summarize for you the six themes and the goals for each of those themes. First, in the area of academic excellence, and Dean Augustine was the chair of the subcommittee that headed this up, did a fabulous job, and the group behind this really thought long and hard about the key points here. So in the area of academic excellence, we want to be the institution that creates a culture of academic rigor. And we want to be the institution of opportunity and access for those students, whether traditional or non-traditional, who want rigorous academic programs. And then we want to be the institution that creates the best opportunities for students' future success, whether that be degree completion, advanced studies, or career preparation. And of course, Eastern's always done an excellent job in terms of our academics. Here you can see some of the photos, our students doing independent research, presenting their independent research, and of course we are fortunate to be the home of the 2011 Case Professor, Illinois Professor of the Year, David Rabin. And so Eastern's always been about academic excellence, and this is a core to our plan to take further actions to achieve these goals. Next, in the area of global competition and changing demographics, the realization that our globe is ever, ever shrinking with Twitter and other technological marvels. You can be in communication with people across the world instantly. And so our goals in this area are to continue pursuing national and international partnerships. And here in the lower right, you can see Provost Lord and Dean Izazi. Signing an agreement with a university in China, and we want to continue those fine efforts. We have an amazingly diverse campus, and we want to make sure we have campus-wide understanding of our student diversity. In the center photo here, you see some of our international students from India, and here they're celebrating Holi, the Indian Festival of Colors. And our international students and students from other diverse groups really enrich our campus. And so another part of our plan, a third plank in the global competition area, is to recommit to diversity and its global impact and recognizing the importance of students having global experiences. Here in the top photo, you can see some of our students who were on a study abroad trip to China. Third area of our strategic plan is emerging technologies. And through information technology services and through CATS, we have really done an excellent job in providing our students and our faculty with the best technology possible. However, fine setups like these are going to be a thing of the past, and probably a thing of the past quicker than we want to admit. What students in the upcoming years are going to demand is education that they can have anytime, any place, any device. And while we have a very strong infrastructure, it's not ready for that level of ubiquitous learning. And so one of our goals in the emerging technologies area is to make targeted investments in our technology infrastructure so that we can support this future of ubiquitous learning. Also, 10, 15 years ago, email was kind of special. But now it's more of a utility. You expect email to work just like you expect the lights to turn on when you flip the switch. And so some of our technology services are now really at a utility level. And so we want to have a core set of standardized technology services in recognition of that. And then also a desire to make sure that our technology funding, which is rather complicated because technology reaches across the campus so much, is transparent to everyone. And so we'll be tackling those goals in the emerging technologies area. Fourth, campus and community life. As we held discussions last year with many of our constituents, one of the things we kept hearing was a desire to partner with the university. And, of course, we do a lot of that partnering already, and we want to enhance and expand that. And so one key goal in this area is to expand the participation in campus and community events and increasingly continue collaboration with the community. Another goal here is to landscape, streetscape, a welcoming corridor along Lincoln Avenue so that anyone who comes to Charleston, whether they come from the east or the west, recognizes they are coming to the home of Eastern Illinois University, one of the finest comprehensive universities there is. And then another thing that we heard during our discussions was some concern that we just didn't have enough, strong enough school pride. And so one of the ideas that's come forward is next time we enhance our campus with a new structure of some sort, a new landmark, let's build some excitement about that that event to enhance tradition, build some new traditions, and expand school pride. So that's the campus and community life plank. Of course, these discussions can't go anywhere without mentioning money, and financial sustainability was one of the charges President Perry gave us when we started this process, and of course that is another plank in the strategic plan. As I think everyone knows, we've had some concern about enrollments recently, so we have a goal of stable enrollments in the 11,600 to 11,800 headcount range. That's congruent with our institutional capacity. We've also are wrapping up a very successful fundraising campaign, and so during the phase, this coming up phase of the strategic plan, we'll be in a post-campaign mode and assessing the effectiveness of our campaign and moving into a stewardship phase of the campaign. And then finally, as you see in this little chart here, the dark green is our state appropriations. And you can see they are, well, they remind me of my home state of Kansas. They're flat. And so, and right now, flat's a pretty optimistic expectation for future budgets. We simply can't afford to do everything that we may want to do. And so the third goal in the financial sustainability area is a laser-like focus on our mission to have some serious campus-wide discussions as to what are we doing that we can stop doing? What are we doing that's really not financially sustainable or central to our mission? If it's not financially sustainable and it's not central to our mission, why are we doing it? And so those will be some challenging discussions during the next 5 years as we see, as we try to keep our financial sustainability in light of this sort of trend in our state funding. The final plank in our strategic plan is marketing and communication. And so one of the things we heard from many, many people is that Eastern is doing a tremendous job. We have many success stories to share, but not enough people know about them. And so we need to effectively communicate our mission and who we are. And we want a renewed focus on marketing and branding, which will likely require some administrative restructuring of our marketing area. And as we found out during the campaign, one of our goals for the campaign was to reignite some of our relationships with our alumni, our donors, other external audiences, and we had great success in renewing a lot of those relationships, and we want to continue that trend. And so we want to increase our communication with the friends that we have out there. And so those are the six key planks of the strategic plan and the basic goals that we have for all of those. The detailed version is on our strategic planning website. And within the next 2 to 3 weeks, we'll have a new strategic planning website that'll be used to update the campus as to our progress of implementing all of these ideas. And of course, we'll be working closely with the governance structure, with the Board of Trustees, and the campus community to keep everyone informed as to our progress in pursuing these ideas. So in summary, when we accomplish all of this, when we focus on these six planks, these six strategic themes, what do we want? Well, our shared vision is that Eastern Illinois will be a premier comprehensive university, global in its reach and impact, but preserving that core of personal connections with faculty and staff that support our students' academic success. So with that, I'll close the presentation, and it's really my great pleasure to request the board endorse the strategic plan. And of course, I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Well, thank you, Dr. Weber. And thanks to you and to Ken and to Sege, who were the other co-chairs, I believe.
That's correct.
And the 28 members of the steering committee. If we could have a motion to put this on the docket and the second, then we can have our discussion.
I make a motion to approve the new strategic plan.
Is there a second?
A second.
Discussion. Any questions for Dr. Weber or any other comments regarding the strategic plan?
Well, I wanted to thank the board for their feedback. For the benefit of the audience, the draft of this strategic plan was presented at the January meeting, and in the intervening month and a half, we've had a lot of great feedback, comments, and from the Board of Trustees, and those have led to improvements in the plan and in the follow-up parts of the plan.
Dr. Weber, President Perry, I presume that what kind of feedback will the board be getting as the months progress with regard to progress on the plan?
Okay. Again, as I've mentioned, we're in the process of building a new website, and it occurs to me that I was remiss in forgetting to recognize Pete Taylor, who was our web designer. We had an extremely powerful website that made the process a transparent one. And that website attracted nationwide attention from other universities. In fact, one university liked the website so much that they requested the code for it. We thought about selling it, but we declined. So we are in the process of building a website that will have status indicators on each of the actions in the strategic plan, along with status updates as to what's been done with those. In addition, throughout the process, I've been meeting with our various governance groups, our staff senate, our civil service council, faculty senate, council on university planning and budget, giving them regular inputs, and of course, I've been doing the same with the Board of Trustees, and so I assume this will be a frequent agenda item for the board. In addition, because of the board's input on this last round of the plan, there's also a tentative implementation plan for this for the strategic plan, and we'll be following that very closely as well.
Okay, thank you.
Also, Mr. Chairperson, at the summer board meeting, we will have a thorough review of progress to date, and at the individual Board of Trustees meetings, the quarterly meetings under the President's report, we will have reports on from individuals in the university related to the six strategic themes. For example, at this meeting, the board will hear a presentation from our Information Technology Systems and Center for Academic Technology Services, which is critical for that technology plank of the strategic plan.
Is there any further discussion? If not, can we have a roll call, please?
Mr. Dano?
Yes.
Mr. Dively?
Yes.
Mr. Getz?
Yes.
Mr. Hutchinson?
Yes.
Mr. Cradiville?
Yes.
Mr. Shirley?
Yes.
Mr. Welch?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes. Congratulations, Dr. Weber. Next item has to do with purchase approvals. Dr. Weber, you handle that as well?
Yes, thank you. We have three purchase approvals for you to consider today. These are expenditures that are $250,000 or more. The first purchase item on page 3 of your binder is for a high-performance digital nuclear magnetic resonance spectrometer. Try saying that one 5 times fast. This purchase is to replace a unit in the chemistry department that was damaged by vandalism. It is an essential piece of equipment to the chemistry program required for their accreditation. The funding for this purchase comes primarily from insurance coverage, and so the funding source is a mix of appropriated and local funds. And so at this time, I would request that the board approve this purchase item.
Could we have a motion, please?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Seconded.
Discussion. I know how old the old spectrometer was because When I came on the board, that was the first equipment item that we purchased. And as I recall, it cost $250,000. So at the open house of chemistry, I went over that next week to see what it looked like. But we got it. At any rate, apparently the price has gone up.
Just a tiny bit.
Are there other comments or questions about the spectrometer? Roll call, please.
Mr. Dano?
Yes.
Mr. Dively?
Yes.
Mr. Getz?
Yes.
Mr. Hutchison?
Yes.
Mr. Cradaville?
Yes.
Mr. Shirley?
Yes.
Mr. Welsh?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes.
Thank you. The second purchase approval we have for you today is our annual supply of chemicals that are used to maintain the process water in our heating and cooling systems. As you may be aware, you can't just pump any old water and steam through our steam tunnels. That water used to make our steam has to be carefully treated. This is a contract renewal that we have an option on, and so with your approval, we'll be renewing that option. The cost is not to exceed $750,000, and this contract we have is with United Laboratories. The fund source is a combination of appropriate and local funds, and again, at this time, I request the Board of Trustees' approval for this purchase item.
Make a motion to approve that purchase.
Second. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Is there any discussion regarding purchase of the chemical supply? If not, roll call, please.
Mr. Dano?
Yes.
Mr. Dively?
Yes.
Mr. Getz?
Yes.
Mr. Hutchison?
Yes.
Mr. Cradaville?
Yes.
Mr. Shirley?
Yes.
Mr. Welsh?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes. Dr. Weber.
Our final purchase approval today is another contract renewal. This is a contract that is in place where we have an option to renew for five additional one-year periods, and so we are requesting that we be allowed to renew for an additional year. This is a contract for telephone service and related multimedia. The vendor is Consolidated Communications, and the cost will not exceed $800,000. The funding source is appropriated in local funds, and at this time, I request the Board of Trustees' approval for this purchase.
Can we have a motion, please? We're going to be without telephones.
I'll make a motion to approve it.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion second. Discussion. Roll call, please.
Mr. Dano?
Yes.
Mr. Dively?
I'll abstain.
Mr. Getz?
Yes.
Mr. Hutchison?
Yes.
Mr. Cradaville?
Yes.
Mr. Shirley?
Yes.
Mr. Welsh?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes.
Like
we will have
much.
Telephones.
The phones are back.
The next item of business is naming of university property. And I believe Bob Martin, is he here?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, here, Chairman.
Can I make that presentation? Thank you.
Yes, I have three naming opportunities to present. The University Naming Committee has recommended that the following naming opportunity be approved. The first one is Clem Hall, 1309, in recognition of Robert F. DeVolt, class of 62. Mr. DeVolt is a Peoria native and earned a bachelor's degree in technology education from Eastern Illinois University. He earned a master's degree from San Diego State in 1969. Played on the EIU football team in 1960 and the wrestling team in 59 and 60. His late wife, Mary Lynn, was an EIU graduate also. He taught technology in the Chicago area before attending law school. Upon graduation, he practiced estate law in the Chicago area for many years before retiring to Apollo Beach, Florida, where he now resides. He attributes much of his success to his experience at Eastern Illinois University. Robert DeVault has made a significant gift to the AU Foundation to support the AU School of Technology Future Fund. We would like to honor Mr. DeVault's generosity by naming Clem Hall 1309 in recognition of Robert F. DeVault, class of 62. This space is the scanning electronic microscope lab used by AU School of Technology. It is recommended that the Board of Trustees approve the naming of Clem Hall Room 1309 in recognition of Robert F. DeVault, class of 62.
I guess we'll take these one at a time, Mr. Martin, you think? Could we have a motion, please, regarding this resolution?
I'll move.
So, Joe moves.
Second. Seconded.
I'm sorry.
I'll second that.
Second.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jared. Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Mr. Dano?
Yes.
Mr. Dively?
Yes.
Mr. Getz?
Yes.
Mr. Hutchison?
Yes.
Mr. Cradaville?
Yes.
Mr. Shirley?
Yes.
Mr. Welsh?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes.
The second one is Clem Hall Room 3104 in memory of Mark R. Rogstad, class of 79 and 81. Mark Rogstad, Mr. Rogstad, graduated from Belvedere High School and earned a bachelor and master's degree at Eastern Illinois University in technology education. He had been an instructor at the University of Montana Western in Dillon, Montana. He was a member of the Technical Education Association of Montana. Mark R. Rogstad made a bequest to the EIU Foundation for the purpose of the EIU School of Technology Future Fund. We would like to honor his legacy at EIU by naming Clem Hall 3104 in memory of Mark R. Rogstad. This space is a classroom used by the EIU School of Technology. It is recommended that the Board of Trustees approve the naming of Clem Hall Room 3104 in memory of Mark R. Rogstad, class of 79 and 81.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. Is there a motion?
So moved.
We have a motion from Chris. Is there a second?
Second.
Second from Roger. Discussion. Roll call, please.
Mr. Dano?
Yes.
Mr. Dively?
Yes.
Mr. Getz?
Yes.
Mr. Hutchison?
Yes.
Mr. Cradaville?
Yes.
Mr. Shirley?
Yes.
Mr. Welsh?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes. Mr. Martin?
Final naming is Buzzard Hall, Room 1842, the Diana Peckham Memorial Journalism Lab. Miss Diana Peckham was a longtime Illinois journalism teacher. She directed several high school yearbook workshops at EIU and was a founding board member and past president of the Illinois Journalism Education Association, headquartered at Eastern Illinois University. Diana Peckham passed on September 22, 2010. Based upon the contribution of service to journalism education in Illinois and her financial contribution to the journalism department at EIU, we request that Buzzard 1842 Journalism Computer Lab be named the Diana Peckham Memorial Journalism Lab. It is recommended that the Board of Trustees approve this naming opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. Is there a motion to that effect?
So moved.
Second.
Mr. Dano and Mr. Cradaville. Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Mr. Dano?
Yes.
Mr. Dively?
Yes.
Mr. Getz?
Yes.
Mr. Hutchison?
Yes.
Mr. Cradaville?
Yes.
Mr. Shirley?
Yes.
Mr. Welsh?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes. Is that, that's yes, it? Thank you.
Sure.
Our next item of business is setting of tuition and fees for the coming academic year. And I'm going to ask Dr. Perry if he would lead off that discussion.
Thank you, Chairperson Welch. It's my pleasure to present our proposed tuition and fees today. I have some remarks to make to put our request in context. First, I needed to get my faraway glasses. By state law, as most of us know, the tuition rate for new undergraduate students entering the university in a given year remains the same for at least 4 years of continuous enrollment. If a specific curriculum requires more than 4 years of enrollment for completion, the rate remains the same for the required time of the curriculum. This allows new students and their families to plan tuition costs for 4 to 4-plus years. Please note that neither fees nor housing rates are subject to this restriction. On the other hand, our increases in housing rates have been quite low, and in the January meeting, you may recall, you approved an increase that was the lowest in 20 years at EIU on a percentage basis. I'm going to be talking about the tuition rate here. We have no new fees to present to the board today, although we are asking for reconfirmation of some fees that the board has approved previously. And Dr. Nadler has that detail, and that detail is also in your addendum. Now, tuition at public universities in Illinois has increased substantially over the past decade or so. And there's a reason for this. Since fiscal year 2002, general revenue appropriations to public universities in total have declined from $1.5 billion to $1.29 billion. Taking inflation into account, this decline has been figured to be between 35% and 40% reduction in appropriations to public universities. For example, the 13.3% drop in actual dollars plus the 25.74% increase in CPI for the Midwest region over the decade leads you to about a 39% decrease in purchasing power of the appropriations, general revenue appropriations to universities, public universities in Illinois. Now, of course, tuition rates have risen, as we know, to make up for this decline. In EIU's case, our annual increases for the decade have met inflation and the decline in general revenue, plus included roughly an extra 1% for program enhancement, which is key for the quality of the programs in the university. Of course, tuition increases are under increased scrutiny from every angle. The federal government has expressed concern. In particular, President Barack Obama has announced plans to shift some federal funds from colleges and universities that do not control tuition increases to those universities who do control such increases. You've seen this in various media. I think there was something in the local paper today, but according to eCampus News in its March 2012 edition, the money being targeted by the Obama administration is about $3 billion in what is known as campus-based aid given to colleges to distribute in programs such as work-study and Perkins Loan programs. Now, that's $3 billion out of a total of $143 billion, I believe it is, that the federal government provides in other kinds of support for students in higher education. Now, in addition to this particular set of funds, again, according to the eCampus News, Obama's plan posits increasing that $3 billion to $10 billion for use to award the better performing universities. And that money will be awarded, again, based upon this news article, based on institutions setting responsible tuition policy by offering relatively lower net tuition prices and or restraining tuition growth. Second, providing good value to students and families by offering high-quality education and training that prepares graduates to obtain employment and repay their loans. And third, serving low-income students by graduating relatively higher numbers of Pell Grant-eligible students. From these three criteria, you can see there is an emphasis on value and performance, hallmarks of EIU for many, many years. I think under a program like this, EIU would be quite competitive. Also at the state level, performance-based funding has developed in response to the desire for results that align with the public agenda for college and career success in Illinois. Results that are good with respect to tuition cost. Again, this is in line with what some of the objectives of President Obama's plan is. The results of the first round of performance-based funding in Illinois show that EIU is in performance second out of the 12 public university campuses in the Illinois Board of Higher Education's Step 1 funding model and third out of 12 in the Step 2 funding model. So we are a top-performing public Illinois University. Our efficiency is one of our hallmarks. We have enacted several cost-cutting and cost-avoidance measures in order to keep our tuition and fees affordable over time. We have reduced positions by approximately 100 over the past 2 years. That's about a 5% reduction. And we have cut non-personnel operating costs by 25%. Of the four-year public university campuses in Illinois, our combined tuition and fees are the next to the lowest. Regardless of performance or cost savings, the fact is, and we know this, that increases in tuition are unsustainable in the long run. At our summer meeting with the Board of Trustees, we will discuss sustainable pricing models and methodologies with an eye to a different model for determining tuition increases in the future. Additional context for tuition pricing is the context of inflation and its impact on our families, of our students. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics in the CPI urban data for the Midwest region, the CPI rose 2.8% from January 11 to January 12. The energy index, which includes motor fuel and household fuels, was up 5.8%, and the index for food rose 4.6%. Excluding food and energy, the Midwest CPI urban increased 2.1% for the year. Inflation affects us when we purchase commodities and go through procurement processes, but also we know these inflationary increases have had impact on family incomes. Although it's difficult to project inflation in the out years, CPI trends, or recent CPI history, does give us a trend line with which to work. So when we set our tuition for new students, we really assume relatively stable inflationary pressures. In addition to these inflationary pressures, the Illinois economy has failed to rebound, and the personal income tax has increased from 3% to 5%, and that has had an impact on our families as well. Now, in addition to the context of pressures on families, we have the context of pressures on state finances. Now, it's interesting to note that as the appropriations for public universities have declined since 2002, the appropriation to retirement for higher education overall has increased from $243 million to $980 million. That's about a, that's quite an increase. That's almost a fourfold increase. So it's no surprise that pension reform has become such a high-profile issue in the news these days and in the political process in Springfield. And it's no surprise that there is a push for universities to start to pay part of the employer contribution for retirement, thus offloading a historically centrally funded item onto the universities. Despite the income tax increases that were levied, the state's unpaid bill backlog has not been reduced and remains at approximately $8 billion. For EIU and other public universities, this means that once again, for the third fiscal year in a row, we will not receive all of our appropriation by fiscal year end. Currently, we're behind some $24 million. So we come to our proposal for fall 2012 resident new student undergraduate tuition. This applies for new students regardless whether they're at the undergraduate or transfer level. We are proposing an increase from the fall 2011 new student rate of $269 per semester credit hour to $279 per semester credit hour, an increase of $10 per semester credit hour. This is a year-to-year increase from last year's new students to this year's new students of 3.72%. This is the smallest percentage increase in tuition in the past 11 years. To put this in context, the inflation for the past 4 years, CPI Urban Midwest stands at 7.4%. Please recall, as I mentioned before, that our housing rate increases improved at the that you approved at the January meeting were the lowest percentage increases in 20 years. When you combine a tuition increase, percentage-wise, that's the smallest in 11 years, and a housing rate increase, that's the lowest percentage in 20 years, I think you can see that we are paying attention to the affordability issue for our families, and it is consistent with our strategic emphasis on opportunity and access, as was mentioned and in one of the bullet points of Dr. Weber's presentation just a few moments ago. Now, because families are deciding now, based on financial considerations, where their freshman or transfer student will attend college, we don't have the luxury of waiting around for a final state budget appropriation before setting tuition for new students. Thus, we come to you in the March meeting to seek approval for the new student rate. In arriving at our proposed new student rate, tuition rate, we consider several factors, as you know, because much of this information was sent to you by email a couple of weeks ago, and we discussed all the factors in setting our proposed new student tuition rate earlier today in a joint meeting of the Finance and Audit Committee and the Academic and Student Affairs Committee meeting committees of the board. In arriving at our proposed new student tuition rate, we consider several factors, including but not limited to the potential level of state funding for us, the estimated increases in our university's financial obligations for contracts and negotiations for contracts, our projected enrollment, consumer price index data, as I've already mentioned, and the impact of previously implemented cost containment measures before determining a tuition recommendation to the board. I need to say a few words about our revenue projections. We do expect no general revenue increase from the state. Indeed, there is potential for a reduction dependent upon how the political process works with respect to pension reform. So we don't expect any new money from the state. As our students progress at Eastern Illinois University and the seniors graduate, they are replaced by a junior class. That junior class pays more in tuition per semester credit hours than the seniors did. And likewise, as the juniors move up, then the sophomores replace them and so on. That cascading effect creates a revenue increase. Taking into account historical retention rates and projections for the incoming freshman and transfer student classes, we estimate a new revenue of $2.8 million. Now, that has to be balanced by our expense projections. On the increased expense side, we have the following items which are aligned with our strategic plan themes and the Noel Levitz consultation on enrollment. As you heard earlier, the strategic plan has been developed over a year, so we've had quite some time to work with the strategic themes as they emerged and see how they would affect our budgeting. Also, the Noel Levitz consultation began last fall. Has been intense, it's been effective, and we've gotten some good information from that consultation that has led to some of our expenses we're planning next year. Tiered merit scholarships, $500,000, presidential faculty research fund, $100,000, student athlete welfare as a result of our NCAA recertification where deficiencies were noted we had to take care of. Integrated marketing and communication position and support, $125,000. Enrollment management position and support position, $125,000. Program support, $85,000. These add up to about $1 million, leaving about $1.8 million for commitment for other increased expenses. And on the increased expense side, we have as yet unknown effects of pension reform on source of funds for employer contribution to employee retirement, but that could easily be $1 million. The results of labor negotiations, which are still pending, and we don't know what the outcomes of those will be. The acceleration of deferred maintenance on our buildings and cash flow effects. Although for the past two fiscal years, we have received after the end of the fiscal year the balance of our appropriations, there is no guarantee of that, and so we have to be careful and conservative with respect to that issue as well. So these items alone, we believe, will use up the remainder of the revenue increases that we are projecting. I want to say one word about cost savings. Our efforts at operating expense reductions and restrictive hiring over the past 3 years have produced $5.2 million in base savings over the past 3 years. Without these base savings, we would not be able to do what we're doing in terms of program enhancement and building enrollment at the university. Our faculty and staff are working very much more efficiently to enhance the quality of an EIU educational experience in the face of these kinds of reductions. We have created savings in other areas in the university by various means, including reducing telephone expenses, implementing electronic billing, and implementing energy savings. There are many more areas, and we continue to look for others where we can get more cost-saving opportunities. Tuition setting for other EIU students is tied to our resident rate. Graduate student tuition is tied to undergraduate tuition by a multiplier of 2.4 because of the differential cost for graduate education. Non-resident graduate education. Non-resident undergraduate tuition for students from neighboring states equals resident undergraduate tuition, as we're trying to be more competitive in our recruiting in neighboring states. And the same is true for academically well-qualified undergraduate students from anywhere in the world. Overall, what we're trying to do is achieve balance. We're trying to balance the quality of our programs with the affordability of our programs. We are trying to achieve affordability and access and excellence, as was mentioned earlier in our strategic planning proposal. And with this tuition proposal, I believe we are balancing the advancement of the university's programs with the financial pressures on our students and their families. The coming years will make the balancing of affordability, performance, quality, and access more and more difficult. Hence our discussions this summer about the efficiency and robustness of our models. Our strategic plan does provide near-term guidance and provides a platform for framing a future of affordability and excellence. The two critical factors for us to continue as an institution of opportunity, a place where our students can pursue their dreams, the American dream. And our proposal to the Board of Trustees is for a tuition rate that enables continued investment in the quality of our programs while maintaining our commitment to affordability and access to a university education second to none. We are a top-performing four-year university with virtually the most affordable tuition and fees in the state. The Board's approval today, should it be forthcoming, will confirm our historical and ongoing commitment to affordability, accessibility, and excellence. So the proposed tuition and fees are before you. Dr. Nadler and I will be pleased to answer any questions you may have with respect to the proposals.
Thank you, President Perry. It looks like we would handle these in two different motions. Could we get on the table a motion to approve the tuition recommendations? We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Second. Ready for discussion. Or questions for President Perry or Dr. Nadler or any other comments you might have regarding the tuition increases?
Mr. Chairman, just a comment. If we consider the at least two vital components of the public agenda on accessibility and affordability, which includes the public sector of higher education, certainly Eastern Illinois University. It is a bit disparaging to read various articles about the current plight of students when they graduate with a significant debt. From my own personal experience with Eastern Illinois, when I attended, it was both accessible and affordable. And I was able to graduate without any accumulated debt. And it's unfortunate that that is the circumstance that faces so many students today. The other issue that was brought up about the tuition increases, this model that we are utilizing, and I agree with this, is unsustainable over the long term. I don't have a solution to this, but if the General Assembly, which initiated the public agenda by their action, is going to follow suit with the concept of affordability and accessibility, there will have to be a change in the state as well. So I will support this motion, but with some reservations. And I think it's I think other members of the board feel in much the same way, that this movement of privatization without a plan is not something that we should support. But that's apparently the direction the state is going in, even though when we look at the performance-based funding report, Illinois is placed in the category of high performance with low state support. So the high performance has been the function of public higher education. The low performance has been on the realm of the General Assembly. So those are my comments.
Thank you. Mr. Dively?
Just clarification, President Perry. Your comments on the neighboring states, they pay resident graduate tuition rates? I didn't follow the comment there.
Students from neighboring states, undergraduates, pay our in-state tuition rate here.
Okay.
Great. Further comments? Dr. Nadler, I wanted to ask, what would be the total cost for an undergraduate student, next year's freshman, for example, to attend Eastern Illinois University, including the tuition and the housing and food costs?
That cost, it would be tuition fees, room, board, and books would come up to $19,700.
How much?
$19,700.
You did not say much about the scholarship support to President Perry. On the other end of this scale, would you care to make some comments about that?
Well, our financial aid office works with the families and students individually. We know each family's situation is different. We package financial aid. 80% of our student body has financial aid of one sort or another. Financial aid takes the form of Pell Grants, in other words, federal kinds of support, MAP grants, state forms of support, university scholarships, student work, federal work study, and then loans. When you look at the average financial aid of students with financial aid, and I believe Jerry Dona is here, I think the last number I saw was around $12,000 a year. Some of that is loan. In addition to the scholarships we've had in the past, we've instituted two new scholarships. One is the Panther Promise. We received legislative authorization to do that last year. That is focused on middle-income families. That is family income from $33,000 to $66,000 a year. Our other scholarship program, which was again, motivated by the Noel Levitz consultation and the academic excellence part of our strategic plan, is a tiered merit scholarship program, which is awarded on the basis of a combination of ACT score and high school grade point. Given that 80% of our students are on financial aid of some sort, even though these are tiered merit scholarships, many of those will be awarded to individuals who also have financial need. Since these are both new scholarships, we don't know yet the impact that will have on yield. But we do know one thing for certain. If a student comes here and has those scholarships, that's money that they're not going to have to borrow.
So, as I understand it, 20% of the students and their parents will be paying the full $19,700. The other 80% on the average would be paying around $12,000.
They would be receiving aid in the neighborhood of $12,000.
Okay.
So they're out of pocket for tuition fees, tuition required fees, room and board and books. Their out of pocket would be somewhere around $7,000 to $8,000.
Do you have any further comments, Dr. Nadler?
No, I don't. Thank you.
Any further comments or questions from members of the Board of Trustees? Could we have roll call, please?
Mr. Dano?
Yes.
Mr. Dively?
Yes.
Mr. Getz?
Yes.
Mr. Hutchison?
Yes.
Mr. Cradiville?
Yes.
Mr. Shirley?
Yes.
Mr. Welsh?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes. Motion carries. Good. We have a motion on the table for the FY13 fee increases.
Motion that we approve.
Mr. Renee makes that motion. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Second. Discussion? Questions? President Perry?
I would just mention that these are fees that were actually multi-year fee increases that were approved by the board in previous years. We bring them to you for reapproval, reconfirmation, if you will. And in your addendum, you will see that two of the fees increases listed for fiscal year 13 and 14. Fiscal year 14 is the last year of the increase for those two fees.
Do I understand that these fees will eventually drop off after these programs are completed?
The increases will drop off, but the fee, the level the fee ends at will be maintained into the future because these fees fund respectively science building construction and improvement, and the other, the Lance O'Brien deferred maintenance and upkeep. But the increases will cease.
Further discussion on the fee schedule? Roll call, please.
Mr. Dano?
Yes.
Mr. Dively?
Yes.
Mr. Getz?
Yes.
Mr. Hutchison?
Yes.
Mr. Cradiville?
Yes.
Mr. Shirley?
Yes.
Mr. Welsh?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes. Well, thank you, President Perry and Dr. Nadler, for all of the data and background that you presented in relation to the tuition increase. It's very helpful to know how we stand in relation to other universities, which puts us in a very favorable position, I think, and also with regard to inflation, because I think there might be a feeling out there in the public that these rates are increasing much faster than inflation. And that is not the case.
Correct.
Thank you. Our next item is the naming of our honorary degrees. And Mr. Martin?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Honorary Degree Committee has reviewed numerous quality nominees for honorary degrees, and I'll be recommending four separate excellent candidates. The first I'm asking you to consider is Sean Payton, class of 87. He's coach of the Super Bowl champion New Orleans Saints and was NFL Coach of the Year in 2006. He's Eastern Illinois University Athletics Hall of Fame inductee. Still holds four single season records, four career records, and three individual game records. He was recently honored as recipient of the Civil Anniversary Award by the NCAA, which annually recognizes distinguished individuals on the 25th anniversary of the conclusion of their college athletic careers. Mr. Payton and his wife, Beth, founded the Play It Forward Foundation in 2008 to raise funds for families and children in need. He was a key figure in helping revitalize the city of New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina. Mr. Payton has always embraced his identification with Eastern and has returned numerous times to aid in various fundraising activities. It is recommended that the Board of Trustees approve the awarding of an honorary degree to Mr. Sean Payton.
Thank you.
I make that motion.
Motion.
I'll second that.
Second. We have a second.
Seconded.
Any discussion? Do you think an honorary doctorate will make him a better coach?
We're hoping.
You're hoping. Okay. Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Mr. Dano?
Yes.
Mr. Dively?
Yes.
Mr. Getz?
Yes.
Mr. Hutchison?
Yes.
Mr. Cradaville?
Yes.
Mr. Shirley?
Yes.
Mr. Welch?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes. All right.
Next is Robert Corn Revere. Mr. Corn Revere specializes in First Amendment and communications law. He's a 1977 Eastern Illinois University Journalism and Speech Communications graduate, earned his master's from the University of Massachusetts, and his law degree from Catholic University. He's been recognized with numerous accolades, including recognition as one of the top 10 communications lawyers in the D.C. area and as one of the top 100 outside counsel power lawyers in the United States. Serving as lead counsel for CBS and challenging the Federal Communications Commission's fine against the television network for the 2004 Super Bowl halftime show featuring Janet Jackson and Justin Timberlake, he has successfully argued other cases in front of the U.S. Supreme Court. In 2003, Corn Revere successfully petitioned Governor George Pataki to grant the first posthumous pardon in New York history to the late comedian Leonard Bruce. He has written extensively on First Amendment and communications-related issues and provided expert testimony before various congressional committees. It is recommended that the Board of Trustees approve the awarding of an honorary degree to Mr. Robert Corn Revere.
Do we have a motion?
So moved.
Have a motion. Mr. Dano. Second?
Second.
Second. Renee. Discussion. Roll call, please.
Mr. Dano?
Yes.
Mr. Dively?
Yes.
Mr. Getz?
Yes.
Mr. Hutchison?
Yes.
Mr. Cradaville?
Yes.
Mr. Shirley?
Yes.
Mr. Welch?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes. I see he defended the uniform malfunction?
Yes. Two Super Bowl related candidates. Next, I have Robert Holmes. Mr. Holmes is the founder of the Astronomical Research Institute. His research tasked by NASA and the Minor Planet Center at Harvard has been at the national and international level. He has built and operates a private observatory that includes three telescopes of international significance. He is currently building what will be the largest privately held telescope in the world. Mr. Holmes has earned the prestigious Edgar Wilson Award for the discovery of a comet. His observatory is responsible for more near-Earth objects data than any place in the world. Through his work in NASA education and public outreach programs, his work benefits about 300 schools in 40 countries each year. It is recommended that the Board of Trustees approve the awarding of an honorary degree to Mr. Robert Holmes.
I'd like to make that motion.
We have a motion. There's a second?
Second.
Second. Discussion?
Is he an alum?
No.
He's not. Relationship to Eastern, then, is?
He volunteers here in the past as adjunct professor.
Oh, I see.
For classes here, and he makes his observatory and telescopes available to us and to 300-plus schools around the country.
I see. Thank
right.
you.
He's actually lives nearby.
In Ashmore.
In Ashmore, and he has this phenomenal record of discovery of near-Earth objects, and he has observatories over there. It's really quite fascinating. And he has this very strong relationship with our physics department and our astronomers.
Any other questions? Roll call, please.
Mr. Dano?
Yes.
Mr. Dively?
Yes.
Mr. Getz?
Yes.
Mr. Hutchison?
Yes.
Mr. Cradaville?
Yes.
Mr. Shirley?
Yes.
Mr. Welch?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes.
The next and final candidate is Julie I. Nimmons. Ms. Nimmons graduated from Eastern Illinois University in 1977 with a degree in music. Ms. Nimmons is the chairperson for the EINU Expect Greatness campaign. It is the first comprehensive campaign in the university's history. Thanks to her volunteer leadership, the campaign's financial goal of $53 million has been exceeded more than 2 years ahead of schedule. During her tenure with Shut Sports, she was twice named as one of the top 25 leaders to watch in the sporting goods industry. Other recognition for Schutz Sports during this time were two new product introductions and the top five new products of the year and the equipment manufacturer of the year by Sporting Goods Business Magazine in 2004. Ms. Nimmin served on advisory board for Lincoln Landon Community College and Eastern Illinois University. She also served as advisory member of the Illinois Governor's Council on Health and Physical Fitness, as a member of the National Athletic Trainers Association Research and Education Foundation Board, and on the Sporting Goods Industry Hall of Fame Committee. Ms. Nimmin has served on the Board of Trustees for Eastern Illinois University as its chairman of the Steering Committee for the First Capital Campaign, as vice chairman for the National Board of Trustees for the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, on the Board of Directors for the Alliance for the Future of Israel, and as a volunteer at Children's Hospital in St. Louis, and as a mentor for the Advancing Women in Leadership Program at St. Louis, Missouri. It is recommended that the Board of Trustees approve the awarding of an honorary degree for Mrs. Julie I. Nimmins.
Could we have a motion, please?
So moved.
Motion second. From Chris, second from Joe. Discussion. Roll call, please.
Mr. Dano?
Yes.
Mr. Dively?
Yes.
Mr. Getz?
Yes.
Mr. Hutchison?
Yes.
Mr. Cradaville?
Yes.
Mr. Shirley?
Yes.
Mr. Welch?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
So my one question is yes. That is this the honorary degrees are be awarded at this year's commencement at the end?
Not all of them. Sean Payton's will be awarded at next May's, not this May's. And then we will let the candidates know, and either between May and December, they will be awarded.
Thank you.
Moving down to the information items, and the first agenda item is President Perry will give the President's report.
As mentioned earlier, Mr. Chairperson Webb, the intent is, with the President's report, to present each board meeting an item that relates directly to one of the six planks of the strategic plan. This month, we have a presentation from our Departments of Information Technology Systems and our Center for Academic Technology Services, and we have the directors of those two organizations here to tell you a little bit about their organizations, the current status of technology, and where we're headed, because it's an important infrastructure item for us. So I will yield the floor to both Blair Lord and Bill Weber to make any additional introduction you'd like to make for Kathy or John.
Really, I don't have too much more to say other than to say that it's John Henderson, who is the Assistant Vice President for Academic Affairs and head of the CATS Center for Academic Technology Services, and Dr. Weber may want to introduce Kathy himself.
Yes, Ms. Kathy Reed is our Assistant Vice President for Information Technology Services, and I think both John and Kathy assume their roles within the past year or so, and it's quite crucial that the infrastructure backbone technology side of the house, which is the business affairs side of the house, and the academic technology support from the academic side of the house, they have to work very closely together and partner very well to avoid any unnecessary duplication of effort. And I'm glad to say I think we have that cooperation and communication.
So if John and Kathy would come forward to make their presentation in whichever order they would prefer.
Good afternoon. I'm not that tall, am I? Thank you very much for allowing time for John and I to share information with you this afternoon. We are both very pleased to be here. As Dr. Weber alluded to, I'm the Assistant Vice President of Information Technology Services. Our department consists of six divisions. This afternoon we're going to be talking about three of those divisions, the three in the first column or left-hand column. The packet that's being distributed to you of documents, the first four documents on top are ITS publications. We publish four newsletters. The first one's called Lincoln Land. We do that on a quarterly basis, and it's for faculty staff. The next two are Scope and Continuing Tech, which are geared for our students, one for on-campus students, one for students enrolled in continuing education classes. And then the fourth one is called It's Just Us. Obviously, we like plays on words. We change the ITS to It's. And that's just for distribution within ITS for us to communicate better with ourselves and to get to personally know each other. What you're seeing on the screen is one of the just a screenshot from our student technology guide. That's a document that sits out on the web all the time. It's a compilation of information from CATS, from ITS, from our housing technology staff, from the information, instructional support specialists that reside in each of the colleges, so that we have a technology guide that students can refer to at any time. And we also have a corresponding guide for employees. Our information systems division both develops new application systems as well as providing support services for vendor purchase systems. Probably one of the most well-known systems they support is known as the Banner ERP system. What you're seeing here is the PAWS version. It's the web version that students use to do such things as register for classes, view their grades, check their student account, view their financial aid information, just several different tasks. This system is one that may be a little bit familiar to some of the board members. Some of you got to tour the textbook rental services building when they opened it up. And the textbook rental system, was one of the first information systems that our information systems group worked with that employed RFID technology. And between the RFID technology and the new location of textbook rental services, it allowed that textbook rental check-in, check-out process to become a self-service process and seems to be much more pleasing to the students. This system was also recognized just this past November in a magazine called Campus Technologies as one of seven ways to streamline student services. A system that was just recently implemented is the early alert system. This was requested by the Committee on Retention Efforts. This allows faculty at any time to go out there into PAWS and identify students who may be at risk academically. Maybe they're not coming to class, maybe they're not turning in their assignments, whatever it is. The faculty member can go out here and fill in that information, and then that student can start receiving support services just that much sooner, and hopefully we'll be able to retain them as a student.
So how is that program working, do you think?
As far as I know, it's working fine. I haven't heard any feedback that it's not working well. It was modeled off of another institution's project. So,
I believe there's going to be some data analysis done, and we're going to pull the data together and do an analysis.
Our user services division includes the help desk. Help desk is where everybody calls if they have any type of desktop questions. It can be our faculty, our staff, our students. Anybody that wants to can call 581-HELP, and hopefully someone will pick up the phone there. This past fall, I guess it was, we decided to let our student workers take a more active role so that we have at least two student workers working from the hours of 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Granted, that 8 a.m. time slot was a little bit difficult to fill, but we have students working all during that time, and they are our front line. They are the ones who actually first field the calls. We gave them training in the most common types of calls we receive, and then if they're not able to answer or uncomfortable or, you know, maybe it's their faculty member on the other end of the phone, they can hand it over to one of our full-time help desk staff. And just to give you an idea, during 2011 calendar year, our help desk fielded over 18,000 calls. So they're a busy group. In our infrastructure technologies, one of the groups is called Systems Administration. They handle our university's central information systems, things like Panther File, which is our file sharing system, Panther Mail, which is our official EIU email system. They handle the support of WebCT, our learning management system, and they also provide the web services, not the programming, which you see here, but they provide the web services that support our web presence. Our Enterprise Systems and Operations Group supports all the enterprise data storage and servers that are in our main data center in Student Services Building. What you see here is just a snapshot of one row of the equipment in our data center. We have, I believe it's 140 physical servers in our data center. In 2008, we started converting to blade server technology. If you're not familiar with that, with blade servers, typically each server has its own cooling system and fans and all of that. With blade server technology, these servers or blades actually slide into a chassis, and that chassis supplies that, the cooling and everything, so that it reduces energy consumption, reduces costs, and reduces the footprint needed for those servers. And along with that, we also started a server virtualization project, so that typically in the past, one physical server would hold one operating system and one application system. And it really didn't make good use of all the capabilities of that server. With virtualization, we can put many operating systems and many application systems on one physical server. So that even though we have 140 servers in our data center, we have 10 physical servers that are housing over 150 virtual servers. So once again, it's a cost savings, and it's also making efficient use of our resources. In our data center, we have approximately 175 terabytes of data storage available. To kind of put that into perspective for you, 1 terabyte is approximately 1 trillion bytes of information, which 1 terabyte can hold 1,000 copies of the Encyclopedia Britannica, or 10 terabytes can hold all the printed material that's in the Library of Congress. So it kind of puts it into perspective for you a little bit. The network systems is our other branch of the infrastructure technologies. On a typical day with our network, we transfer 2.5 to 3 terabytes of data back and forth between the internet. And we have redundancy on our network such that 2 out of 3 of our main core routers can fail, and 2 out of our 4 distributions can fail, and we can still pass data back and forth. It will be on a limited capacity, but we will still have some capabilities. But as we all know, wireless is the way to go right now. So what you see here is a wireless access point being installed into a ceiling, because in most buildings we have found that they work better when they're put up into the ceiling instead of being installed like on a wall. Okay, we have about 700 wireless access points spread across campus right now. And we are working with housing, Mark Hudson and Housing, every year to increase the wireless available in the residence halls. Even though the residence halls have wired ports in every room, the students really want the wireless capabilities. So I think for this fall, I believe it's, or this summer, I think it's Ford, Weller, and McKinney that are slated to get wireless capabilities. To give you an indication of how popular wireless is, in 2009 we averaged 600 wireless users. You know, that's how many would be on maybe at one time. This past fall, during our peak times, we would have over 2,100 on there at one time. So it's really important that we continue this. We're working on a 3-year project plan right now to refresh our edge switches on our network, because as Dr. Weber mentioned, we've got to have that anytime, anywhere type of availability for our students for learning. So with that, I'm going to let John have the floor.
What happens to be peak time?
I'm sorry, what?
I'm just curious, what happens to be peak time?
It's a little bit odd, okay? Peak time is during the day, you know, when faculty and staff are also using wireless. Peak times come around noon, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, things like that. With students, we actually see an uptick about midnight, 2 a.m. Yeah. And every time we install more wireless access points, just like when we're working in the residence halls, a lot of time they'll get turned on by floor in the residence hall. We do not have to tell the students it's available. They find it immediately.
Other questions for Kathy? Thank you very much for your presentation, Kathy.
Thank you for inviting us here today. Kathy and I have been collaborating since 1998. We both came as managers and ITS together. I was director of user services, and Kathy was director of information systems. So we know Eastern very well, and we collaborate very well. I only have four divisions, so Kathy's bigger than I am. But my first division is the digital and multimedia division. And in that division, we most people think of it only as producing videos, you know, for various projects that professors do. But we maintain a YouTube account so that they can go out and view all of their materials. We administer a flash server so that we can get stuff to the classes. We stream videos to the classrooms, and also to our learning management system, and that's where they go onto the web and learn. We do captioning. I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, the state mandated in their accessibility law that everything that we produce or had been produced be captioned. I will say that my group has all of the past stuff captioned, and the only thing that they don't have captions is stuff that they are producing today. So they have done a fine job catching up with that state law. We also have in that group, we have a classroom lecture capture, which tapes the professor as he's doing that lecture. We can then put that up onto the web, and the students can go back and review what was said during the day if they didn't take their notes properly or stuff. We're finding this to be very useful for our athletes as well. So it's a pretty good group. We also have some very talented students, and we just recently won a digital media. We finished third place. We finished third place behind Princeton and Harvard, and this was a video on our new energy plant. And some of the also-rans were Stanford, Dartmouth, and Texas A&M. So we're very proud of these kids. They did a fabulous job. The other center that I have is the Gregg Technology Center. This started out as just an open lab for students, which had computers. We had 52 computers in there so that students could go in and use it at any time. We open at 7 in the morning, and we go to 2 a.m. But within this, we try to make it an emerging technology lab environment, but we not only make it for the students, but the faculty can come in. But within it, we still have a computer lab, but we reduced 52 down to about 24. We did a multimedia center so students can come in. They do a lot of video projects in class. They have their own multimedia center. And this past year, we set up a new studio for them so that they can do their own productions as well. And this 2 years ago, we started doing training for students, which is something that we hadn't done before. We train them in Microsoft Office. We train them in Audacity, GarageBand. These are all those are audio presentation materials. We train them in SmartBoard, which is a board within the classroom. When they go in and do a presentation, they can use exactly the same thing that faculty members use. And within Gregg, we have a classroom of 25 computers set up with a SmartBoard, with all of that, so students can have a place to go practice. And like I say, we're open from 7 to 2 a.m., so they have plenty of opportunity. Within the equipment checkout, they have video cameras, they have iPods, iPads, laptops. Normally they're checked out for a certain period of time, but they do have access. Within the lab, the software is all Macintosh and Windows, so we are dual platform. We do use all iMacs in there, but it's a dual boot system. Student sits down, they see a screen, they can boot into Windows, or they can boot into Macintosh. The other group that that I work, that I have the pleasure of working with is the web office. The web office not only does the, you know, the main page of the university's website, but this My EIU is a work in progress where they have worked, and the Noel Levitz report was mentioned today, but they have worked with those folks. This is like a portal, and as a student applying to this university, I go to this one place, find all of my information, fill out everything, you know, and so the communications is open for them. It's been a wonderful project. We did some, we had an orientation a couple weeks ago, and we pulled students off the orientation list and brought them in and said, okay, what's wrong? And, you know, they told us some things. So it's a great group. They listen, you know, and they work very hard. The other one I have is mobile applications. This gentleman has developed QR codes, which are quick response codes. You've probably seen them on the side of products in the grocery stores and stuff, which will take you to literature. He also tied these QR codes into a response system. We use clickers in the classroom. Well, using these QR codes, we can use anything. We don't have to have students buy clickers and stuff. Still in development, but we're getting there. Also, he has an EIU mobile app, and I don't really, but it works on a Droid, it works on an iPhone, works on whatever you want, but within that you can register for your courses. You can check what to eat in what dining hall that day. You can log into your LMS, check your grades, do your homework, either on your phone or an iPad or whatever. You can look up the schedule for the shuttle. You can check the weather in case you don't want to open up the door and walk outside. It has very, very good a map thing, like MapQuest or something, to get anywhere on campus that you'd like to go. It has PAWS. You can register for your courses. So we're moving towards that emerging technology. We're getting there as fast as we can. Probably the heart of CATS is the training. Like I said, we started training in Greg a couple years ago for the students. But one of the biggest cries when CATS was created in 2001 or two, and that big booklet that I passed out is the whole history of CATS. It was our 10th anniversary, and we're really, really proud of what we've accomplished. But we started, one of the biggest cries was, okay, you've got technology, and you're starting to put technology on campus, but I don't know how to use it. You know, this is our faculty members crying. So we set up extensive training for, and this was a campus-wide effort as well. We used instructional support people that are out in the colleges. We used some of our own staff, which was limited at the time. But training became one of the things that we were really known for. The last thing that Kathy and I want to talk about, so she's got to come back up here, is collaborative projects. And most of these projects that we're going to discuss this afternoon relate to the strategic plan as it is written now. So we like plans. When I first went to CATS, we developed an educational plan for a five-year plan so that all of our classrooms would have the same basic technology. I'm happy to say all 205 classrooms at EIU have the same basic technology and additional technology as requested by the faculty members. You will not find a public university in Illinois that has all of their classrooms completed. So we like plans. So, Kathy, you want to take the first part?
The first collaborative project we're going to talk about is called Desktop Virtualization. This is a project that we're doing ITS, CATS, and the College of Education, specifically Dr. Tom Grissom. Our pilot project for this is to use desktop virtualization in one of the College of Education's labs. And what this is, it's also referred to as VDI, Virtual Desktop Infrastructure. What it allows is, in a lab, instead of having the traditional desktop machine on each workstation, you can have what's called a thin client. It's a machine that has a lot less capacity, is much less expensive than the traditional desktop. And the reason you can have this thin client is because instead of the operating system and the application being hosted on that desktop, it's actually hosted in our data center on our servers and storage. So at the time the students in the lab boot up that thin client, then that operating system and application are served to them via the network from our data center. So it saves on the cost of the lab. It also saves on the human resource time when it comes time to update that operating system and that application. Instead of having to go to every single lab machine and doing it 20 times, you do it once at the data center. So it's a good cost savings both ways. And also, too, eventually each student will be able to go anywhere on campus, and when they log in, they see that desktop that is specific to them and has their learning needs on it. As I mentioned before, we're virtualizing servers. We're not only doing it for our ITS and for our enterprise applications, we also have virtualized CAD servers, housing servers, and about half a dozen other departments. And this is something we want to see continue to progress. As various departments need new servers, it's less expensive if they will go the virtual route, hosted in the data center, so that we have the environmental controls already there in our data center, plus we have the redundancy, we have the backups, and we have the ITS expertise to administer that server. The comprehensive inventory of assets, that comes right from the strategic plan. We're not talking just the hardware assets, we're also talking software and our human assets, the technology positions on campus. We know that there are little pockets of technology all across campus, and we need to just take an inventory of those and make sure, you know, we know what we have and that we're utilizing it efficiently. And CATS and ITS is, of course, ready to start that inventory now, and we're going to start with the technology positions. The project management clearinghouse is also something that really came out of the strategic plan. The web team in CATS, our ITS teams, and there's also report writers scattered across campus, all receive requests from anybody on campus, really, that wants to request something. And it's critical in this time that we make efficient use of EIU resources, that we're doing the right projects at the right time for EIU. So this whole project management clearinghouse, that's going to be one of their goals, the right projects, the right time, the right fit for the university, and utilizing the right resources. IT Summit is something that just started 6 or 7 months ago. I can't remember when the first meeting was. And that is the leadership of the IT departments of all the state universities. We've all gotten together now, I think it's 3 different times, and we're trying to organize as a council. We're getting ready to create our charter and elect officers. We want to act as resources for each other. We want to be able to do projects together, particularly with emerging technologies. We also want to be able to utilize each other's best practices. And one of the other things that's happening is that one of the representatives from the IBHE, Alan Phillips, has attended our last few meetings, and he's very interested in seeing this group become an advisory board to the IBHE.
Okay, we'll wrap this up. Some other collaborative projects that we're working on. This was a campus-wide project. Our current learning management system shelf life January 1st, 2013. Okay. We have faculty members, we have technical people from ITS, we have procurement people from the business side of the house, we have trainers, we have everybody working on this project. Last part of the project is coming up, and that will be having procurement open up the RFPs. Bulk ordering of PCs, again, it crosses all lines. It crosses into procurement, it crosses into ITS, it crosses into inventory in the business office. Before we we would do a bulk order, it would come in, and somehow it would always slow down, and everybody would be calling, say, where's my piece of equipment? Well, it could be sitting in this closet because we were waiting for a tag, or it could be sitting in that closet because we were waiting to get it set up. All of the paperwork and everything is done ahead of time now, so that when it does come in, there is a smooth process. We're testing it. We will refine it. We will work better with academic departments. And it's crossed all lines. Collaboration on this campus is one of the best things going. Support for laptop initiatives. Kathy talked about wireless. We need more wireless. You talk about ubiquitous computing. Well, we have five or six departments now that have laptop initiatives requiring their students to bring their own machines, thus the VDI project, so that students don't have to purchase their own software. It will be provided virtually for them on their laptop, here, home, on the road, wherever they go. So we are, and that's ubiquitous computing is part of the strategic plan as well. And then my unsung heroes that at the Gregg Technology Center, after 8 p.m., we still have classes till 10. We still have faculty and students that have needs, and we are open until 2 a.m. So we become the help desk in a collaborative effort with ITS. The nice part that we got out of it was some neat phones. So that's pretty much it for us. But we do have a great team on both sides of the house, and I do know that since Kathy and I have been in the positions we are, communications is very, very good. So thank you.
Well, thank you, John. We may have a question, John, if you would wait just a second. Chris?
Technology moves at a speed different than people, systems, certainly culture. For both good and bad. I wonder if you're, and I'm interested in your thoughts, if you're on the cusp of changing the definition of what it means to be in attendance. You talked about YouTube recording lectures. Certainly that would be a passive method to receive classroom interaction. But right now we define attendance as showing up at a class. But if I could FaceTime into a class and I could see what's going on in real time, if I could ask questions. It's an interesting idea to begin to think about how we define attendance for our students.
We do have a program that's called Illuminate that I can do over the web, and you can see me. I can share a whiteboard with you. I can share software with you. It's recorded, and then you can go back and view it again. So, yeah, we're there. When I mentioned YouTube, we use that mostly for supplemental, so that people can go out and look at a training program that we may have done or something. But yeah, it's difficult, but we can do that now.
Quick anecdote: I used to live down on 7th Street, and when it'd be 30 below, me and all my roommates, we would maybe not go to class every day. What about a world where that becomes irrelevant, where 30 below is irrelevant to classroom attendance, and I can participate, learn, and then grow in a way that is remote? Again, there's positives and negatives to that.
There are positives and negatives. I mean, I grew up going to class 30 below because I'm from Maine. So, yeah, I do understand. Other questions?
Yes sir. There was a mention of the BHE is interested in an advisory board. Exactly what mission would you be constructed for? What?
I'll defer that one back to Kathy.
As I mentioned, Alan Phillips from the IDHE attended our last couple of meetings, and he was talking about that there are already two advisory boards to the IDHE. He mentioned the faculty advisory board. Now I'm going to forget the other one. But these advisory boards also don't consist of just people from the university systems. They also consist of people from community colleges and private private universities also. Right. And he seems to be the tech person from the IBHE, so that he wants to help provide us guidance when it comes to how we're organizing and some of our goals and thinking big. But then he also wants to make sure that our concerns are getting relayed to the IBHE.
But this would be on a statewide basis?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. This was all 12 state universities have had a presence at these meetings. And we know that we're still in infancy. We are not ready to work with community colleges or private universities yet.
Okay. Thank you.
John, I think you said a prospective student could pull up My EIU and fill out everything. What do you mean by fill out everything?
Well, go through the registration process.
Full registration.
Apply for admissions. I don't know what else they're doing.
Yeah.
My EIU is mainly to pull them in, to interest them into Eastern, so that they can, if they have a question for a faculty member, a question for the admissions office, if they're ready to fill out the application, they can get to it from My EIU. Really their first connection online with these.
Thank you. Any other questions? Yes, Joe.
From a technology perspective, from either one of you, where do you feel like we're at risk of falling behind? Is there any place, if you had discretionary capital dollars, that you'd say this is where we need?
I think Kathy and I both agree that infrastructure is one of the places that we fear falling behind. Some of the things, like the laptop initiatives, are doing away with us having to replace certain labs. That's part of the virtual desktop, the VDI project. We're reinvesting some of that money so that we can stay ahead, so that we can spend a little more money on infrastructure. Some of the servers that she talked about were paid for by CATS. So, yeah, but it's all in our best interest to keep that infrastructure up.
And it does take a different kind of infrastructure to be able to do all the virtualization and the VDI projects. You need a different kind of storage so that when you have, a lab of 60 of those thin clients all booting up at the same time, that you can be sure to get that one operating system and application to them via your network.
Yeah, because we used to try to stream video in a wireless environment. Well, when you start streaming video to 24 laptops, your whole thing goes down. It doesn't.
There's so wireless presence in every classroom.
Right.
You can't have 50 students sitting there streaming. Right. Streaming takes a lot of bandwidth.
So we had to put more ports in and put in a load balancer, for which, ATAC and CATS paid for, so that because it was a classroom situation and it was a learning environment for us as well. So
I guess one other comment, just I would applaud your collaboration. I just think I have a family member who works in a university system, and every college and campus, it's almost like they fight one another and want to have their own proprietary system, and so just would applaud.
Thank you.
Thanks.
That's great.
Anything else? Thank you, John and Kathy.
Thank you.
President Perry.
That concludes my report, Mr. Chairperson.
Thank you. The report from the board chair. Just like to make the observation that in reading the university highlights and watching the newspaper and seeing all of the awards that have been coming in the direction of EIU students and faculty, Professor of the Year, and keeping up with Princeton and Harvard, and all these other, rewards and honors coming to university. I think it must be reflective of the focus you have on quality. Hope that it is.
Absolutely, and a whole team that's committed to it.
Thank you. Anything else on that? If not, we go to the report from the committee reports. The Executive Planning Committee, I don't think there's any special report called for. We spent most of our time dealing with the tuition matter. Mr. Cradaville, Board Relations.
Yeah, we met this morning, and we covered a number of different areas. One section was on alumni, and a new Distinguished Service Award is going to be a new one this year. Talked about the alumni events. There were 21 done this year with 1,300 participants. Faculty staff campaign kicked off February 1st. Got 60 volunteers, which is a high rate, quite outstanding. In philanthropy, over the goal, we've talked about that earlier, so we got that pretty well covered. And EIU Foundation, there are two seats open on the foundation, and there's an effort to fill those up. Number of events coming up in the future. One of the things that Mr. Martin talked about was this big family weekend celebration coming up in October, and that's something to look forward to, especially for those who are fireworks people, since that's going to be due there. Marketing and communications, talked a little bit about the new position, integrated marketing position, and what's going to happen with it, and that was very interesting. So that's about it.
Thank you. Finance and audit, focused mainly on the items of finance that have already been discussed here at the meeting, I believe. Academic student affairs.
Thank you. Comment on two items that were was on the agenda. One is the report on the academic progress of the various athletic programs at Eastern, and are pleased to announce that all of the respective sports teams have met the minimum requirement from NCAA. Right. So congratulations to that effort. A second item that was discussed in some detail was the proposal for outdoor digital displays that would have essentially electronic or digital information on university events, also with advertisement that would be essentially financially supported by the various advertising agencies at no additional cost to the university. The consensus was to support this initiative. We also received an update on the dean search, the culture of success and retention, and basic skills performance for education students.
Okay. Any questions of Mr. Welch? Board regulations, I presume there's no report, Leo?
No report.
No report. Okay. Move on to report from constituencies. We have no report, I believe, from the Faculty Senate. We have no report from the Staff Senate. And student government, Mr. Shirley would like to make a comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I asked Dr. Webb for the opportunity to share some exciting news coming out of student government. Similar to back in 2009 when student government sponsored a MAP grant, letter campaign to our Springfield legislators to keep the MAP grant. Over the past 3 weeks, we have been doing a similar letter drive in favor of supporting the science building. We're going to hand deliver these letters on our April 18th lobby date. Today alone, we had a bit of a letter blitz. The chemistry department was very gracious and allowed teams of student government senators and execs to come to their classes, these lecture halls with 60, 70 students in them, and pass out letters and collect letters. Today alone, we raised 500 letters. And we've also developed an online version of this letter to Springfield so that people who are not on campus or alums, we've been advertising this link on Facebook. It's on petitionbuzz.com. So alums that still check their Facebook should see an ad, and they can e-sign the letters, and we'll print these out and deliver them to Springfield just like the paper ones. Now, our initial goal that we set approximately 2 weeks ago was to raise 1,000 letters, which we surpassed in 14 days. Our new goal was bumped to 2,000 letters, and as of today, the total amount of paper and online letters in my possession is over 1,500 letters. those of you that were around for the planning of the steam plant know that student lobbying had a very important impact and part of the very vast lobbying effort that went into that. So I'm cautiously optimistic of what the impact of these letters could do. And I would just like to publicly thank the members of student government. We do have a couple members in the audience, and thank them for their effort in making this happen and potentially telling Springfield that we want this building. So thank you.
Thank you, Jared. Outstanding report. Standing report. We have a report from the Annuitants Association. Dr. Jane Osier will be making that presentation.
I'll get some from my office.
I understand annuitants have some issues nowadays.
Thank you, Dr. Webb, trustees, and President Perry, and all the rest of you. Again, the EIU's Annuitants Association appreciates the opportunity to inform you of our annual activities. Our primary activity is to communicate with Eastern's annuitants and current employees, providing them with information as it relates to our pensions and benefits. Communication flows from our State University Annuitants Association through our webpage, emails, quarterly newsletters, and quarterly chapter meetings. Locally, the association holds three chapter meetings at the Neal Welcome Center and a luncheon. Approximately 35 to 80 people attend our chapter meetings, with nearly 180 attending the luncheon. Programs focus on EIU updates, legislation, benefits, educational topics, volunteer opportunities, and we do have some fun. Among our speakers this year were President Perry, Vice President Weber, Professor Laureate Cameron Craig, State University Annuitants Association Executive Director Linda Brookhart, State University's Retirement System Director Bill Mabe, Senator Ryder, and Representative Rose. We were entertained by one of our annuitants, Alan Horney, in the Four Voices. The annuitants were honored to be included in the strategic planning process, and a campus meeting was scheduled for annuitants input. Later in September, we were included in the Visions Conference. The benefits choice period was most chaotic. There, Dr. Webb, I saw you there. So it was the most chaotic time in May and June with the insurance plan changes. Annuitants called and dropped by the EIU benefits office requesting explanations and clarifications. In an attempt to help annuitants understand their health benefits options, Eastern Human Resources Benefits Services staff organized two meetings for EIU annuitants at the Neal Welcome Center. Many attended. I don't have a number, but many attended, as well as Dr. Webb attended. So, however, as you know, even after that time period, changes occurred. Lobbying efforts, annuitant outcries, and lawsuits resulted in health care insurance and extensions were effective through June 2012. To assist annuitants in the upcoming benefits period in benefits services has taken the initiative to partner with the Lifespan Center and the State Health Insurance Program, referred to as SHIP. Two of our annuitants will have been trained as SHIP counselors and will volunteer their services at the Lifespan Center. Also, the benefits services staff is developing their web page with helpful annuitant information and easier access. Annuitants are engaged in statewide meetings. In September, Frank McCormick and I participated in a dialogue on the Mercer Report with the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability Executive Director Dan Long and his staff in the Stratton Building in Springfield. Several annuitants attended the Springfield SUAA annual meeting and the fall SUAA meeting in Normal. The association encourages annuitants to establish and maintain continuous communication with their state legislators. In addition to their letters, phone calls, and emails, we emphasize the importance of sharing information face-to-face in the local offices. We notify annuitants of legislature session breaks so they can see their legislators in their local offices. This year poses additional communication needs. We remind annuitants to be aware of the state redistricting implications and to educate themselves of the candidates' platforms to help them as they cast their votes. Members contribute to the SUAA Action Fund. Next month is our 41st annual luncheon, at the St. Charles Parish Hall in Charleston. A luncheon highlight is to award an EIU student our EIUAA scholarship. The recipient is given a plaque, and a nameplate is attached to the larger plaque hanging in the Neil Welcome Center. Alan Horney and the Four Voices will again entertain us. In May, I will speak to the retirees at the retiree dinner in Tarbell Arts Center. We increased our membership this year from 728 to 736 current members. That takes into consideration that, sadly, 21 members passed away during 2011, and two more members have died since 2012. To honor those deceased members, the chapter made a contribution to the EIU Scholarship Fund. The EIU annuitants are most appreciative of the opportunities the university continues to offer us through volunteer activities and services. And I thank you very much for the opportunity to give this report today.
Thank you, Jane. Any questions, comments? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Summary of purchases, Dr. Weber.
Yes, thank you. We have one purchase to report in the range of $100,000 to $249,999. This is a purchase from Institutional Network Communications for cable TV services for our residence halls and other areas on campus. And that's the only purchase that we have for the information report.
Okay, we take no action on that. That's understandable.
That's correct.
Is that right? Are there other matters? We have no requests, I think, for public comments. Yes, sir.
I apologize. I didn't realize I didn't get a request ahead of time for a public comment.
Yes, the board has a procedure. A policy for a procedure for going through to make public comment. So I'd recommend that you take a look at that, and we would be happy then to hear your remarks. We also have a policy regarding the subject of the remarks, and our policy states that public comment will not be approved on disputed matters that are being addressed in internal university processes, such as grievances, student judicial proceedings, pending bids, and labor negotiations. So if your comments do not relate to that and you go through the process, we'd be happy to hear your remarks.
I understand. I will withhold comments then, but I would like to going to be allowed to speak just to deliver?
Well, you are allowed to speak, but you must follow the procedures. Yes.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any other matters to come up before the board? If not, could I have a motion to adjourn?
No motion?
You are adjourned.
Hey, I did so do much, it, Joe. I appreciate it.
Did it.
It has been, but it's really been.